Okay.
On March 16th, we first learned, Mary Ann Melley, M-E-L-E, 58 Carter Road. On March 16th, we first learned that you wanted to put 110 units on the Gulick House. And whereas I want to believe this new application to rezone it yet another time is because you listened to all of us, but I don't believe that. I think it's another situation of following the money. And I think when you change this designation to ANOR, you will give the town, as what you said, more ability to do more things with the property, which I translate to, you're going to make the property more attractive to a developer, and we, the taxpayers, are going to pay for that. So I think the new designation is to give the town more ability to spend taxpayers' money to make the site more attractive, put in the sewers, put in the do whatever it is that you feel you can basically get away with and make this a better deal for the developer that wants to put these 110 units in. And I ask you, do you have a developer now?
First of all, you have fundamentally no understanding of what's happening. Yeah. And I don't know if it's purposeful or not, but with all due respect, sorry, I apologize if that came, if I came out too hot, I'm very sorry. But you started off by saying you wanted to put 110 units on this. None of us wanted to put 110 units on it. So words are important. And then you said follow the money, like it's some kind of thing that we're trying to grab at and somehow make money. The taxpayers are not involved in the development of this property. This is a private commercial property. So taxpayers' money going into develop this is not even a thing. It's not even a thing. So I'm concerned because I know your legal background in this, and I'm concerned that people out there are giving you more weight than your words are actually conveying, because those two things are not a part of this process.
Didn't you just say that this new designation gives the town more opportunities to make the property, you didn't say more attractive, but that's what it sounded like.
So I encourage
the reason for changing the designation?
I will encourage you to do a little research on what the redevelopment law is, because what is being said, listen, you get to, you're speaking, I'm listening, I'm speaking, I hope you listen too, okay? So the redevelopment law, should this be an area in need of redevelopment, allows the township planning board to be a part of the process in terms of the land use application. So if and when a developer makes an application to develop this land, we have more power and right to dictate what this looks like in our community to make sure it's as consistent as possible with the character of our community. That's the power. It's not, you can do your eyes all you want, but that's the power. It's not us developing the land, and it's certainly not an us and you situation. This is our community. And we all have obligations here to make sure we follow the law, and that we do the right thing on behalf of the entire community. So the redevelopment law isn't about us following money so we can do things on this property. It's about us protecting the character of this community in ways that we know, by law, we are able to do. We could do something else. We can put our head in the sand and say, go away, developer, go away. But we know they're coming, right? So we can say go away, and then the developer doesn't go away. They go to court, then they put 180 units on this property, and they say, we're gonna do what we want to do. But this is our opportunity. This is where the fight is. This is where the line in the sand is, as far as I understand this. The line in the sand is this. The property is gonna be developed. It's just going to be developed. Do we want to give up and not participate in this development to make sure that we protect our community the best way we can? By limiting the number of units, by making sure the building is set back as far as possible so when you're driving into our community, it kind of maintains the character of our community. It's just proper, responsible planning. That's what it's all about. And if we just sit there and deny the law as it exists, deny our obligations, we're going to lose. And that's the responsibility I feel in this whole thing. Just respecting the law and doing what's in the best interest of the community. It has nothing to do about backdoor deals and making money or spending taxpayer dollars. It's about maintaining, this is a planning board, the character of our community to the best way we know how.
I take issue with your use of the term character of the community because I don't think it's genuine. And I'll just say one more time.
It is genuine. I've been in this community for a long time.
May I speak now?
Yes.
I listen to you now.
Yeah.
My concern is why the change of designation, and I listened to you people, and you said you're changing the designation so that the township can, let me get the exact words, plan more to negotiate better and to have greater control. What that says to me is allowing you to change this designation, if I'm wrong, correct me, is giving you permission to plan more for better negotiation and greater control. To me, that sounds like spending money. That's what it sounds like. If I'm reading that wrong, then tell me.
But what
is the change of designation going to do? Plan out for Lawrence Township more to be better able to negotiate, to have greater control. That sounds like spending money to me.
God, that's a leap that I'm not connecting.
Well, what is
like
the reason
spending
for
money.
Changing the designation today? What is your reason?
Bethy, is
the changing of the designation, which I think is being referred to as designating the property as an area in need of redevelopment, the purpose is to fulfill the terms of settlement agreement that required the municipality to evaluate the property as an area in need of redevelopment. If yes, then we'll be able to adopt a redevelopment plan on the property. And those are.
What does adopting a redevelopment plan mean?
It's essentially a zoning district that would apply to that site. It comes in a different format. Typically, it looks like a report rather than a typical ordinance, but it essentially is the same thing. The distinction that I would draw as I talked about the benefits of redevelopment is that redevelopment plan can have more detail, greater control over the property than conventional zoning.
And to me, it means reduced units on the property, reduced density on the property. That's what it means to me.
Then say that.
I just said it. It's been said a couple times, right? We said what the developer wanted to do to this property.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we stop that from happening and reduced the density on it.
Better negotiation to have greater control. Okay.
Can I ask one question here? Are we talking, I feel as if this conversation or this part of the public hearing has gone more towards the fourth round housing agreement and less so about the area in need of redevelopment. And so I feel like I understand Ms. Mealy's concerns about what the fourth round housing looks like and how this property has been added into it because of litigation and settlement agreements, but that's not the topic of tonight's conversation. I'm sorry, you can shake your head, but tonight is about whether this property is deemed an area in need of redevelopment. That's it.
That's
it's nothing
correct.
Else. There'll be plenty of other hearings about what that redevelopment plan looks like. Correct me if I'm wrong. what comes after that. But right now, today is one step.
So you're going to vote in this redevelopment, and we, you know, once again, we don't have a whole lot of say in it. And I think it's going to translate into, once again, as you said, as you all agree, giving us more control so we can better negotiate.
Chair, I would just say to Ms. Mealy's comments, I think I think as a lawyer, you know that there are sometimes when and I know this as an architect, that there are certain code things that I have to follow. Now I can follow them creatively. I can sort of do the best I can and see if the plan code officials approve it and they're comfortable with my thoughts. But at the end of the day, I have to sort of play within the rules of the Uniform Building Code, Construction Code in the state of New Jersey, right? And I think for us, we are trying to follow what is before us in terms of the, I forget the name of it now, Beth, please help me, because otherwise it's going to take me a little bit to find it. The Local Redevelopment and Housing Law, NJSA 40A:12A. You can also Google that. And so that's why I asked the question. Yeah, I think we were all sort of asking a question about this process and the fact that this clearly fits criteria A of an area in need of redevelopment. And so it would be, I don't know, very strange for all of us, the entire planning board of Lawrence Township, to go, yeah, it fits all the criteria, but no, we're not going to say that it's an area in need of redevelopment. That seems a little fishy as well, right? And one could say follow the money there, right? Like, why would you do the opposite of what's obviously the path of travel, right?
Why now? Why didn't you do this? There's got to be a reason.
I will end with this.
Okay.
This is the, no.
No, no, I'm happy to listen.
This has been something that's been going on for 25 years. Right? I mean, they bought it in
30.
30. Yeah. So, I guess 25 when the first, the violation. So 30 years. So, there's a lot of people who passed before this who haven't bought the house from the property owner, who haven't done anything. I can't answer that. And well, so I feel like I've come to a chess game where half the pieces are all gone. I only have a few moves that I can make, right? And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make the best of the board that I've been given. Yeah. And I'll leave it with that. Thanks.
Feeling like we have two pawns left. Mm-hmm. My question once again is, do you have a developer signed, sealed, and delivered?
Do you have a developer? Do you have a developer? Does Lawrence Township have a developer? Is that what you're asking? This is what makes me think. I don't know if you understand what's happening right now. Like, it's not our land. We don't have a developer. We would never have a developer. There is no developer.
Let me restrict. Has a developer...
Well, because you're doing the us versus them thing, and it's very...
Just say yes or no. Is there a developer on board?
No. No. Emphatically... No, there's been no land use application filed right now. And to answer the question about why now is because the property owner said now is the time that we are going to do another application before your board for development of this property.
Did I miss that? Did you say that at any other time?
Yes, multiple times. We're not sitting here picking properties. We have an obligation. If someone comes to us as a developer and says, we want to put property here and it's going to include affordable housing, which it has to, then we have to deal with that. We have to deal with it.
That's why I'm just asking.
Yeah. So I mean, we've said that multiple times. Whether you wanted to hear it or not is a whole different thing, and that's what makes this process a little difficult. Is that I feel like you don't want to hear what we have to go through. Like this, we're not creating this. No one up here said let's look at the Gulick property and and put housing on it.
It's not that we don't hear you. It's that we don't trust what we're hearing.
Okay, well, that's
because we feel like we've been deceived. Even if it's just having noticed
that.
Thing.
Yeah, I can't change
and
that.
If that weren't true, you wouldn't have this crowd here. We do feel like we've been out of the loop. Let's be generous with our words. We've just been out of the loop for whatever reason. But this is a real credibility problem, and it's not just me.
Can I just say, I think the reason why it's being designated, or we're doing the evaluation for designation, is because of the settlement agreement requires us to evaluate the property for...
Because the developer challenged our affordable housing plan.
Right.
They filed a challenge. We had to go before a Superior Court judge through mandatory mediation. This is what came out of that.
And regardless of what, I just want to try to bring us back on track, regardless of what actions led, so specifically the settlement agreement, regardless of what may be contained in the redevelopment plan and what folks think about that, the question is the same, the criteria in the local redevelopment housing law is the same, and it remains, does this property meet one or more criteria as for the area in need of redevelopment? If yes, my recommendation is that it does. If the planning board agrees that one or two or both meet those are met, then the planning board should recommend in favor of the designation, and then the council will have that consideration. But regardless of the history and the potential future, the question remains the same.
Right, just to clarify, the settlement agreement didn't say we have to designate it. It said to investigate.
That's correct. The settlement agreement cannot make that decision.
And then we follow the law for that investigation.
Correct. The planning board has an ability to make an independent evaluation, and the governing body will have the same.
Like I said earlier, my name is Brad Moore, and I am the property owner of 3490 Lawrenceville Road. First of all, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak and be heard on this issue. I'd like to raise and read in the record the following objections to the redevelopment designation for the Goulet property. The derelict nature of the structure is entirely because the owner has chosen to neglect it. And due to such intentional neglect, the owner should not be entitled to redevelopment designation. No evidence is shown in the preliminary investigation that the property is in such a state that private capital would not be available for development on site. The vague reference to a nursing facility having been proposed at various dates does not establish that the site cannot be developed with private capital for its designated zoning uses, or that a use variance cannot be proposed for other uses that are not inconsistent with the community's zone plan. To the extent the structure cannot be reused in any manner, it can be demolished without special permits, and ordinary development can proceed on the site without the need for redevelopment designation. Redevelopment designation in this instance is an improper device to free the owner from the burden of a use variance. The actual structure that is said to be derelict or dilapidated so as to qualify for redevelopment designation occupies a fraction of the property that is otherwise not developed. The house occupies approximately 1/10 of the site that is otherwise left undeveloped. The derelict or dilapidated structure does not impact the redevelopment criteria for the property as a whole that is not burdened with any characteristics that prevent development by means of the ordinary use of private capital. The waste disposal system is attached to the structure, but no evidence is shown that the property cannot otherwise be connected to a waste disposal system or sewer system, or that any unique limitation of the site prevents such connection. There are no unique design faults that would qualify this site for redevelopment designation. The fact that no driveway has been constructed is not a factor that supports redevelopment designation. Any lack of access to a highway is simply because no cut or access has been proposed. The topography, placement of the site, and the road system do not uniquely burden the site with any lack of accessibility. No evidence is shown that it is remote or inaccessible because of its location or permanent or immutable features. I'd also like to point out that there's a relative precedent for redeveloping a property, or excuse me, rehabilitating a property of this nature three doors down. There's a house that is built in 1792 that is currently being beautifully restored, and it is my understanding that property sat vacant for many years and it was in a significantly degraded condition. Once this rehabilitation is complete, it will be a gem. The Gulick House is similar, that if properly restored, it would be a marquee property in our community and point of civic pride. We're not creating new historic buildings, and it'd be a shame to lose this one. I do have a question I wanted just to confirm with the board. Redevelopment designation for Gulick House is not on the Township Council meeting tomorrow. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Sisson. Susan. My name is Susan Brahaney. I live at 634 Rosedale Road. And I just wanted to correct the record. I heard that somebody say that this property does not have sewer, sewer available to them. And I'm looking at the wastewater map, and it shows that the property is being served by Ewing Lawrence Sewer Authority. So I just want to make sure that I heard it said earlier that it didn't have sewer access, but I think it does.
I was just going to say that the site is included in the wastewater management plan, meaning that it's eligible to have sewer, but there are no sewers available in front of the location. So it's permissible to. There are some locations in Lawrence that you cannot have sewer. They're outside of the wastewater plan.
Got it.
And they have no sewers. Here, they're in the plan, but they have no sewer available.
So if somebody wanted to.
Sure.
The closest sewer line, I worked for Elston for 25 years, and the closest sewer line to that intersection is a mile up the road by Bristol Myers Swift. That's the closest one. The next closest one to it will be about 3 miles to 3.5 miles going towards ETS. That's the sewer lines. All right, on the corner where the dentist is, does not have a sewer line. If you went up Promise Line Road to the right, that you were going to go to Best, that development's over there do not have sewer lines. I know, I worked for Elston for 25 years. But it might be zoned, but it's not there.
Fine, I'm just drawing your attention to the maps on your site that show that Ewing Lawrence Sewage Authority has deemed, the property is included in that. That's all I wanted to do. Because I don't know whether that falls into the criteria of affecting the housing development designation. If it does, then it's relevant.
Thank you very much. Its presence within a sewer service area is not relevant. I don't think it's relevant to the designation, but I appreciate the detail that you provided.
All right, thank you.
Hi, my name is Mark Brahaney, and I also live at 634 Rosedale Road. In a structure that is historic. It was built in the 1870s. And I think, I understand that we're all here under challenging circumstances, and we would rather be able to see different outcomes for this property and probably for the ETS property. But it does seem ironic that an owner's neglect can lead to the kind of reward that is about to be given to that owner. And I think, unfortunately, you all are in the position you're in, and it does make you seem disingenuous to be making the case for the owner that his or her neglect allows him or her to make a considerable profit. My house, as I said, is historic. I put a great deal of care into it. I own 8 acres. And I guess the lesson here is that if my timing was right, I could neglect my property, maybe encourage its demise, and come back and possibly put 150 units on my property. And if I joined with my neighbor, who has 4 acres, we can combine and maybe put 200 units on our property.
Just wait.
I'm not inclined to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm glad you're laughing at that.
I'm not. I'm just saying, just so wait 5 years while I'll be gone.
Well, I'll be gone too. Anyway, I think it's a very tough situation we're all in. We are over in the audience doing the best we can to make our case in what we think is our best interest and in what we think is the best interest of the town. So I appreciate your hard work.
I do have a response.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Like, that's the first thing I thought of, and that's why I spent a lot of time trying to figure out or find a case that suggests otherwise. It's just the law. It's kind of crazy. But that's the playing field that we're on right now. But it just seems to me, I agree with you, it makes no sense, and it makes me uncomfortable too, to be a part of a process where they had no interest in maintaining this beautiful house for all of these years. They had attempts to move it to different locations on the property. They offered organizations to come in and you know, take it away and put it somewhere else or pay for, and maintain it. All of that failed. And this is where we are right now, dealing with the law as it presently exists.
Well, also a little bit ironic is the fact that if I want to change much of anything about my house, I have to jump through hoops.
Yeah.
I don't mind doing that because I understand the need to
if you want to live there, yeah.
To maintain historic properties, and I understand the public interest in that. But again, it just does seem wrong that a neglectful, abandonment owner is getting rewarded.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, you are aiding that. And I guess you don't have any choice but to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Joyce Allington. I live at 3361 Lawrenceville Road. On the last planning board meeting, there was a gentleman here who spoke about Eggert's Crossing Village. His name was Fred Berry, if you recall. Okay. He said that 50 years ago, they had built this property for families. They have parks for children. I've looked it up online. It's well maintained, as he said. Why can't we do something like that? Why can't we have a building? And I don't want to separate people at the same time, but is there a reason why we can't have another village like that for affordable housing? Why does it have to be 20% of every place that you're building?
The one thing that I could say, and people jump in, is that it's not driven by us. We don't get to say to a private property owner, do this. This is what they want to do to develop that property. It's to us from them. Not we don't get to say as a government, hey, we like your property. We want you to do 100% affordable housing there. Mm. You know, so like just like the one on Texas Avenue, there's a 100% affordable housing complex going up right on Texas Avenue right now.
Okay.
That developer came to us and said, we are interested. We think that spot is a very good spot for 100% affordable housing.
Can you suggest
and then it comes, to, then it comes to us, and then we deal with that. It's okay. Just there's no going around and saying, hey, you over there, we want this there, this or this is better there.
Okay, but can you suggest it to them?
We've had a lot of suggestions to them.
Really? Okay. I don't have numbers, but I would think that if we have to do I've read something about 2 acres. What if we were to put 3 $1 million homes on that lot? I think everybody would be a lot happier to have a whole lot less traffic, for one thing, and everything that goes along with 110 condos.
I would simply tell you this, is that if the property owner felt
right.
that it was going to meet their price point or what they want to do with that property, then that would be a wonderful thing.
I wonder how we can right? do that. Can we contact them?
We've had multiple discussions about different things to try and reduce what was going on that property.
But can we as the public do that, as a community, contact them and ask them, you know, would it be okay if instead of 110 condos, could you put 3 $1 million houses?
We are not a barrier to any of your attempts
okay.
to reach out to the developer with regard
okay.
to that, for
All
sure.
Right. That would be great. Once the developers filed papers with the planning board, Jim Pervis said that you would then do a traffic and environmental and other studies. What are you looking for that will either give you the green light to go forward or a red light to stop them in those studies, like, you know, in traffic studies?
It feels like we're getting into hypotheticals again. My understanding is that tonight's meeting is about whether this is an area in need of redevelopment and not about the developer's plans, because there's no application before this board
Single
at this moment.
Motion.
So
right?
you're saying I should be asking this after the person comes and applies?
Yeah, because then we actually have something to respond to, because these are hypothetical
questions.
Okay,
so right? hypothetical. Can you answer that, though? Once you do a study, what are you looking for? What that would say, okay, we're going to continue, or a red light that says, no,
so,
we can't build 110 condos.
I would, and this is more the planner's domain than mine as an
okay.
architect, but I'll take a stab. How about that? And you can
okay.
correct me. Part of this area in need of redevelopment is it allows us to, as Ms. McManus has said, allow us to do a finer grain zoning on this one site so that one of the ways to say whether it's a red light or green light is whether they comply with what the redevelopment zoning plan looks like. And then on top of that, they then have to make arguments about traffic, all those other things, right? So, I mean, it would then start to fall into after this piece, the redevelopment piece, then it would just be a regular planning board application.
So once they get to that point, will we as a community
Definitely.
Be able to get that information?
Of course, it would be a public
immediately,
public.
So that we can come and speak and say these things.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's when you get the mailings.
Let me be very clear. Just because a site is designated an area in need of redevelopment, just because a site mm-hmm. is subject to a redevelopment plan, that has no effect on their requirements for notice and their requirements for public hearing for a site plan. So. The public will receive the same notice as they would have received if the site is designated as an area in need of redevelopment, subject to a redevelopment plan. The public, for their future one, they will be required to go through the same type of site plan application as they would have otherwise. And two, the same notice requirements will apply. So the developer does not get to skirt a public hearing or notifying the neighbors when they come in for site plan application just because they got a redevelopment plan adopted.
As you know, we weren't, none of us, on March 16th when we all came here, we were not, none of us knew anything about this. Mm-hmm. It was a shock to mm-hmm. everybody. I think that's why people are so upset.
I understand.
Understood. We spoke about that at council the following Tuesday. Mayor Bobby here. We spoke about that at council. A lot of people had cleared out after a public comment, but in our new business, old business, we talked about sort of how do we get the information out more, because legally, correct me if I'm wrong, that was a housing plan. It wasn't a specific site plan application, so it wasn't the sort of 250 or whatever the distance notification that didn't apply to something that affects the entire township.
The people that were closest, because I've spoken to them, they weren't.
No, I understand. That's
yeah.
what that's what I'm saying is that the fourth round affordable housing amendment that was on the March 16th. Thank you. That was something that was impacting the entire township because it was the housing plan for the township of Lawrence, and so that the notification requirements for individual property owners wasn't needed.
Okay.
So can I
Yeah, sure. Mr. McManus, can I ask one question since I'm talking? Does the fourth round, do the new affordable housing laws that were changed, what, a year or two ago, do they allow for separated developments, you know, all affordable versus all market rate, or is it now that they have to be sort of combined?
They continue to allow for inclusionary developments, which is the mix of housing, typically with the 20% set aside, and they also do allow for 100% affordable housing.
Okay.
So, I know, I think Ms. Connolly had mentioned something about the historic aspect is not really considered, and I know, hypothetical going forward, right? But there is, I have to say, I mean, I love the history. I think it's wonderful. Because of March 16th, I started to do a lot of research, and there's a lot of history that involved the Gulick House, right at Province Line and Route 206, the division line between East New Jersey, West New Jersey. I think it's fascinating. I would hate to lose all that. You know, I kind of feel like our history is disappearing. I was kind of surprised about the fact, I know you spoke about it tonight, about the fact that the Gulick House back in February was declared a blight and called for demolition. I guess I kind of felt like I had no idea until somebody in our group brought it up to us. I thought we would have known sooner than that. I kind of would hate to see that.
Are you referring to the resolution that the council adopted in February of this year?
Yes.
So what that resolution did, let me just clarify, is it authorized, it essentially authorized this meeting to happen. It allowed or specifically stated the planning board should conduct this study, which is the report that's been referenced this evening, to review whether or not the property meets one or more criteria. So whether it is going to be demolished, whether the building is blighted or characterized in any other way, was not part of what the council did. It just simply said, planning board, please study this and make a recommendation to us.
Okay. There's concerns besides the 110 condos, a parking lot, garbage containers, if they ever had a fire and they needed a fire truck. There's not a lot of room. I thought it was 6.45 acres. How would a fire truck get in and be able to turn around and back out or get out?
I would tell you that is going to be squarely determined at the time of site plan and perhaps suggested in redevelopment plan. It might become clear how that would happen during the redevelopment planning process, but the actual mechanics and the details, that's a great question for site plan.
And I know you spoke at length about this, in all the years that Carawan owned the property, why didn't the township enforce the required duties to take care of the property? I have a list, which you just showed up here, I have that list dating back to 2001 of violations, where they neglected to do so. And I kind of feel like they should pay a fine for not taking care of that property. I've read that it is on the historic register already.
It's, you can find it listed in the township's list of historic properties, for example, in the master plan, but it's not on the state or national register.
Really? Okay. I wonder how we go about that. Is it too late to do that?
I really don't. I don't know how long that process takes, quite honestly.
Okay. And also, I found out that they've only paid in 2025. They only paid $16,385 for tax. Max Hayden, who is a preservationist architect, had said because they didn't take care of the property, that's why their taxes are so low. I don't know. I agree with Brad Moore. I think somebody needs to say something to Care One that they really should have taken care of it. So with 110 condos, there will most likely be 220 more cars at that corner, more noise. Our property values will go down because of all these condos. Taxes will go up with more children in school. I'm assuming this, you know, like you said, this is hypothetical. Also, Jim Prebisse had said that I had tried to contact all of the planning board members, and he said it's not appropriate to contact members of the board with an ongoing application. But what happens when people are stuck in bed, they're housebound, bedbound, and they want to have a say, but they can't get out? What happens then if they can't email you directly? He said you cannot email. So what happens then? Isn't that a violation of...
We're going back to the hypothetical.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Schmier, but wouldn't that would seem to go against the idea of a public hearing,
right,
if someone was contacting me on the side? Yes?
Well,
the board can't receive letters, petitions, or any of those things. You have to come here. It has to be a dialogue in public.
But what if they can't get out of the house? What if they're bedbound? They want to have a say, but they can't.
Well,
what happens then?
Maybe they would ask a friend who would come in and testify or get put on the record what has to be said, but it has to be a public forum.
So do you know when you'll decide on this property? Is there kind of a time frame within 6 months, within 3 months? Do we have an idea at all? You may have said this earlier, I'm sorry, but I have questions here.
The planning board will make its recommendation either tonight or at a subsequent meeting, and then after that, I'm sorry to say, I need to defer to the council in their schedule.
Okay. I obviously am against it. I don't think that it will fit into the community. Just based on the housing on 206, the other historic homes, you've got Glen Karen, which is the inn, that dates back into the 1700s. And there's many other places, like the person said earlier, somebody is redoing a house on 206 now that's historic. I just don't see 110 condos fitting into our community, that's all. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Eric Lemo at London Carson Road. As I said for the recent meetings, this has always been a learning experience. So thank you all for your time this evening and listening to the questions and concerns as they relate loosely. A question about, and so my next question, of course, I'll apologize in advance because of that. My understanding in terms of the process, right, tonight is a discussion around whether or not the site should be considered a property near redevelopment. The redevelopment plan and that conversation, is that something that this board undertakes, or is that at the town council initially? Is that here, or is that a town council?
So ultimately, there's going to be a public hearing, and that will occur at the town council. The planning board is obligated to review the plan in terms of master plan consistency, although it's not a noticed public hearing. That noticed public hearing where folks will, if you're within 200 feet, receive a public notice saying the redevelopment plan is up for adoption, and having that redevelopment plan available for view, that will occur at the council level.
Okay, so just to clarify, if I wish to provide input to the redevelopment plan, that would be at the town council, or that would be at a meeting designated for that purpose at town council.
Yes, it would be an agenda item on the council meeting.
Perfect. Okay, thank you. Can I ask a couple questions about the redevelopment agreements? Is that okay, or is that better served for that time?
It's probably a better serve for that time because, in large part, because there's no redevelopment agreement right now. If the property is designated as redevelopment, if a redevelopment plan is adopted, then a redevelopment agreement can be executed.
Okay. I know we talked a little bit about the Gulick House itself. My understanding is the same, is that it's not listed on the New Jersey listed historic buildings or the Federal Register, and that it is included in the town ordinance, which I didn't have a chance to pull in front of me. My only ask would be that be included in your report. It discusses the Kings Highway redevelopment area, Kings Highway Historic District, but it would be lovely just to see that the house, at least itself, is at least within the town's listed on the town's list of historic properties. I'll save my other questions for that next meeting. Thanks
and
so
can
much.
Can I just interject one thing?
Yeah.
So the process for town council is that we will do a first reading of an ordinance. So that's where it's just simply introduced. There's no public comment on it. It's just, think of it as notice. I know that's kind of, I'm stepping into something there, but I'm just gonna go there anyways.
Yeah.
That's the notice, right? And then typically the next meeting afterwards, which is typically 2 weeks following, is the second reading. And that's sort of where you have a chance as the public to come and have public comment on that.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to make that clear because we've had people in the past who will come to the first reading, think this is their time to say something, and they say, no, we're just gonna simply introduce it and that's it. So. Just so you know, when you see the first reading, then wait for the second reading, and that will also mean that it's then available to the public to read. So, as well, so.
And one final thing, Mr. Mayor, you made a comment earlier about sort of the town and the way it's providing notice. I feel like I've seen an increase in posts on Facebook from the Lawrence Township official Facebook site about meetings that are occurring within the town. So to whoever is doing that, please pass along.
Yeah, that was one of the things we discussed was to try to get that out a little more, as well as we'll eventually work to try to, you know, Latest in Lawrence, which comes out every Thursday. And
the weekly newsletter that I encourage everybody to sign up for, it's right off the website, it's delivered every week, and we are committing to trying to put public notices on there as well, so at least somebody will receive email who are registered. I think right now there's only 4,000 or 5,000 people. It's clearly, and it actually has a lot of information. It's one way to take a step towards your government to get more information, and we're hoping people will do that.
Actually, the first time I saw this Beth's report was several weeks ago on the website.
Yeah, we put it.
So it's been up there, you know, outside of the required legal notice.
Yeah, we heard everybody with regard to notice and more effort for sure.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Hi, good evening, my name is Brad Craven. I live at 35 Fox Cuff Drive. Thanks for everybody for having this. Candidly, I did not find out about this until my neighbors kept ringing my doorbell and telling me about what's going on up the street.
You got good neighbors.
Yeah, I do, I have great neighbors. And I think that's a concern, though, too. So my question is there was a mention of a settlement agreement. What is that settlement agreement, and is there information that we are allowed to see about it? Because I feel like that might, or at least help some folks here understand what's really going on. Or not really going on, but eliminate that cloud of that's hanging on everybody right now.
Sure. So the settlement agreement referenced, those were our two affordable housing settlement agreements that were executed early this year. One with Fair Share Housing Center, who is a affordable housing advocate that entered into settlement agreements probably hundreds of New Jersey towns. The other one, and I think more, although this, the other one that's more relevant is the one executed with 3641 Lawrenceville Road LLC, essentially the property owners. And in there it talks about this process and the, you heard reference to the 110 units spoke by some of the folks that that had public comment earlier. And I believe both of those are certainly both public documents, and they can be obtained from the township.
They might be, but they're also available for your public.
Yeah. I'm just curious, and again, I'm new to this, I'm not pointing a finger. It just seems that there's some agreement in place with the landowner and some upcoming developer of some kind, right?
It's a public document. You absolutely have every right to have access to it.
Yeah, I was just going to interject. The reason why there's a settlement agreement and why that process wasn't public is because the way the affordable housing is now done in the state of New Jersey is through litigation. And so we get sort of numbers, and then they started to challenge them, and that's where it got into the settlement.
They were a formal objector.
Yeah.
We, municipalities submit their housing plan to court for their review and approval. As part of that process, there's an opportunity for people and organizations to object to the plan, stating the town has overlooked something or done something wrong. We had two challengers, two objections. One was Fair Share Housing Center. We resolved all of their issues in their settlement agreement. The other one was the 3641 folks. Their issue as you can imagine, was about their property. We resolved those issues in their settlement agreement. And as the mayor said, all of that is part of, unfortunately, part of litigation, and so that comes with certain rules. But ultimately, those agreements were executed by the township and by the other parties and approved by the court.
Thank you. So just like, does Lawrenceville already have a certain number of low-income housing that is higher than the standard necessary, and by adding these units, does that increase that base?
No, we don't have more than what is necessary. In fact, Lawrence Township, let me first say, Lawrence has a history of affordable housing compliance. However, in the last decade or so, the municipality's affordable housing obligation, which is given to a new number, an additional number is given every 10 years. The last two numbers from generally 2015 and 2025, those two numbers have exceeded the amount of land available in Lawrence Township. And with that comes a variety of rules, regulations, and complications. But the short answer to your question is, no, we don't have enough that anything is unnecessary, and in fact, we actually can't provide our entire number because of conditions in the township, and frankly, the obligation just being outsized compared to what we have available.
Right, because we don't want to change the community.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So, I'll send them to you.
Hi, my name is Meta Cahill. I live at K9 Shirley Lane. And as many of you, I'm shocked that we've gotten to this point, and I'm trying to make sense out of it. In what year did the LLC apply for a demo permit, and why was it denied? And the proposals that they submitted for development of the property in 1997, 1999, and 2011, can you briefly tell me what those were about and why those were denied? So I can sort of figure out where we would go from now, from here.
I'm sorry, I don't have that information because it's just not relevant to the report, so I didn't gather it. I don't have that history.
And nobody on the planning board knows either?
Enough to speak off the top of our heads, absolutely not. But if you were to reach out to me as the municipal manager to get some more information, I will certainly get you to the right place.
Yeah, I'm just sort of curious as to why they were denied and whether the same issues would come up again with any new proposal.
I mean, very broadly, the Care One facility was an assisted living facility that was the subject of multiple land use applications before the zoning board, and they failed. They just, you know, changing the zoning to accommodate that. Mm-hmm. There was opposition, and the zoning board voted it down several times. And then the last, most recent time, it never really was, they had an intent to try again, and then they failed. So, I mean, that's broadly the history. And I mentioned the demolition permit because I just remembered it in my, you know, in my history of this, that that was the subject of a permit demolition that never, I think there was like an advocacy group for the Gulick House that stepped in to fight the demolition, and that's why it's still up right now.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Evan Thomel. Excuse me for my voice, allergies are calling me. I live at 2737 Main Street. I'm the chairman of the Historic Preservation Advisory Committee for Lawrence Township. This is a committee which was created through a township ordinance in 1986, 40 years ago, with the intent to advise the planning board on the administration of a system of preservation regulations for the purpose to preserve the past by making the past compatible with and relevant to the present. Comes right out of the ordinance. By the way, I had a conversation with someone from the historic, New Jersey Historic Preservation Office today, who mentioned that having done that 40 years ago, ties us with Haddonfield for the oldest ordinance codifying historic preservation in the state of New Jersey. This shows Lawrence Township's long-term commitment to historic preservation. Based on this, we, myself and the other committee members, were surprised that a study to determine that this locally historic designated landmark is an area of need of redevelopment was not brought to our attention We were not asked to review and opine on the document prior to publication and public hearing. We were not part of the discussion on this and the further actions that might take place as a result of this hearing. The ordinance itself that created the HPC in 1986 and the later land use ordinance that was recodified in 2019, incorporating the standalone historic preservation ordinance into a single comprehensive document, documents the reason for creating this ordinance. It specifically calls out the importance of the facts that the historical, cultural, architectural, and social heritage of the Township of Lawrence is given in trust from generation to generation to be used, enriched, and then passed on. The character, lifestyle, and very quality of life in the Township of Lawrence depend in great measure on the protection of this heritage. The presence of historic landmarks is an essential element of the municipal character, and identity is an important factor in the economy of the municipality and the property values therein. And such landmarks are vital to the education and civic-mindedness of the residents of the township. Based on this commitment to our history and historical landmarks, we, the committee, were surprised to see that the property in question did not seek input from the committee prior to and through the process of determining if this should be an area in need of redevelopment. If we had been involved, we would have pointed out several items in the report that I believe are not characterized correctly. Starting with the description of the area section, it does not point out that the property is a locally designated historic landmark, which it is based on the ordinance and what the committee and the council has done for those landmarks. While it is footnoted that the property is listed on Preservation New Jersey website with the date of construction, it does not note that it is also on the list as a historically significant architectural structure that is in danger of being lost. Our township's document describing the landmark states the house is, and I'll quote, generally viewed as Lawrence's best high-style example of Italianate architecture and among the finest of the style throughout all of central New Jersey. The other area of the report that needs correction is the planning and zoning context section. This section correctly reflects that the portion of this road is within the King's Historic Highway District, but that this area is limited to the road corridor. It also states that the property is not within the historic district. And while that is true, it does not reflect that the property itself was designated as a local historic landmark, as I mentioned previously. This designation provides protection for the property and a process for changes to the status of the property, which must come before the Historic Preservation Advisory Committee for the ordinance. Additionally, the study references the 1995 master plan and the 2023 reexamination report and quotes sections that talk about development and creating a wide variety of housing types, which I am fully supportive of. But it fails to quote other parts of the plan where it says our goals and objectives are to promote the preservation of historically significant structures and districts that represent the diversity of architectural styles in the township, encourage new development to be compatible with the style and scale of existing buildings, identify additional individual sites and districts in Lawrence of historical importance, and refine the standard for development to retain the integrity of historic districts and individual landmarks. This master plan specifically calls out for the preservation and expansion of historically significant properties, not destruction and reduction, which is what this process is leading to. Finally, I'm concerned with that the process will set a precedent for unscrupulous owners who purchase these historic landmarks, and they know that they are when they are purchasing them, and let them fall apart and undertake demolition through neglect. We are setting up a means for owners, developers, and those looking for only a return on their investment to bypass our systems and regulations to get what they want without care for the community that they're in. I would ask that the planning board does not move this forward without input from the Historic Preservation Advisory Committee. I'm not sure that we do not end up in the same place that we are today based on the conditions and structure that the owner created. But we should go into this with our eyes wide open, recognizing that we are removing an important historic landmark because the owner did not maintain it. This is important because of the ramifications of your approval of this as an area in need of redevelopment sets into motion potential changes to zoning that will remove the historic designation without any committee review. I would ask that the owner of the property come to the committee with, or another professional with a new estimate for restoral and renovation completed by a historical renovation expert and follow the process and allow the committee to opine. As the last time they presented to us, they stated that the home could be saved within a reasonable cost. That was their estimate because they were planning on moving the building within the property, and this was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. So I think we need to have a new number that shows what that would take and understand and then reevaluate whether that should be demolished or not. And then the last thing I would say is, again, as part of the Historic Preservation Committee, they did that demolition permit that they applied for came before us, and we are the committee that denied that. That's why they did not move forward. So thank you for your consideration.
How long were you a part of the committee? How long have you been on it?
Since 2008 or 9, I think.
8 or 9, okay. Do you ever remember a process where, so it seems like whenever there's a land use application with regard to this property, then Gulick House people come forward, right? And I've been connected to the town for, in some capacity, over 30 years, and I do recall a couple efforts by a local group, the Gulick House Foundation or something like that, that attempted to get the house to be a historic landmark but was unsuccessful in doing it. I can't definitively say that. Do you recall anything like that?
I do not. What I'd say is I believe, and I'm not an expert in this, but I believe the law requires the owner must submit for historic designation. It's not someone that can do that on behalf of the owner. I'm not positive on that, but I believe that is the case.
And then,
so I don't think that ever proceeded because CARE 1 didn't want to do that.
Okay. And then the other thing I want to just hear from you is the preservation of the house itself. Do you believe that this would stop the development of the property? Stop housing units on it? Because that's not the case. So I can tell you that the planning board, we had, and with the property owner, had a lot of conversations about preserving the house and the impact of preserving that house with regard to the intensity of the use of the property with the house and without the house. So those discussions all happened, and it's pretty significant. Preserving that house on that land, as I recall, the level of intensity was significant because it became not a realistic opportunity for development, or because it was just too costly to do without getting more units. So if there is a, let's just say, a $3 million cost to preserve and move the house, well, then a judge overseeing this mediation is able to say, okay, well then what do you need, developer, to make this realistic for you? And so that means more units. So I just want you and everybody to know that the house itself was the subject of a lot of discussion in terms of do we attempt to preserve it, do we require it, what the impact would be, and that's kind of where we are at this point. So
yeah, I guess
appreciate your comments.
Yeah, on a couple thoughts there. So similar to what you guys are saying, we can only review what comes before us, right? So the last one that came before us, they had a very detailed plan of picking the house up, moving it to a section of the property, subdividing that, and putting a assisted living facility there. And it seemed to move along. We were very much on board with that. They brought in Max Hayden and did a whole analysis of moving the house, and they said they can be done. So they gave us a lot of hope that the house could be saved.
Yeah.
We were very much willing to work with them.
But that was with the facility being there.
That's correct. Yeah. That, so, but again, I don't. All of the housing stuff was not done with any comments from the Historic Preservation Committee. Yeah. And again, that's part of my point, is that it was all done, right? Again, this committee was created as advisories for this board. And we were not involved in any of that discussion or any of that that analysis. So you're absolutely right. You may come, and that's what I said in my statement. I don't know if this will change.
Yeah.
We may end up right back where we are, but we would have been left out of that loop, and I can't really say what that requirement would be.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi everybody, I am Dr. Radwazad. I am the dentist across the street from the Gulick House, 3640 Lawrenceville Road. And I really appreciate everybody who came today, and I appreciate the board members as well. I know all of us, we are really working towards a better Lawrenceville. So I've been through the process before, and I just have a few questions. I'm going to make it short. I know everybody wants to go home. So first of all, are you guys planning to change the zoning of the property?
So the question tonight is whether or not the property is designated as an area in need of redevelopment. If the answer is yes, ultimately by the council, my expectation is that a redevelopment plan is going to be adopted that would effectively change the zoning for the site, and doing so would be consistent with what's set forth in our housing plan and that settlement agreement that was referenced earlier.
So is it going to be residential or commercial?
It's anticipated to be residential in our housing plan.
So that is going to affect the whole impervious coverage, the
Absolutely. The impervious coverage, the building type, there'll be a lot of changes on the property. All of those will be regulated in the redevelopment plan or the township's existing code, and they'll have to come back before, presumably, the planning board for site plan approval to confirm that they've done their stormwater management properly, that they've complied with township code, etc.
And what about, and I know you answered that about the sewer. So I know that there is no sewer. I mean, when I came to connect, there was no sewer. So you said the sewer is a mile away at BMS. Is it privately owned by BMS? Is it Lawrenceville?
Yeah, Lawrence Township.
So how are they going to dig?
Well, until we see a plan, we don't know nothing. All I'm saying, there is a sewer a mile away up by Bristol Myers Swift, and that is an Elsa sword line. And then 3 miles or 3.5 miles towards ETS,
mm-hmm.
which they have their own treatment plant there, but they go into Elsa's line, which comes to us at the plant.
And the sewer on BMS, is it on the line, like separating between the two properties, or do they have to dig through the BMS private?
It's on Providence Line Road. The sword coming out of BMS is on Providence Line Road, right by the driveway.
BMS has a private sewer.
I mean ETS, I'm sorry, ETS.
I'm asking about BMS, Bristol Myers.
Bristol Myers Swift pumps out to that manhole on 206, and it goes over to Fackler Road where that bridge is, and you see the little station there, which is going to be rebuilt. That's where that goes.
So if they, let's say if things go and then they start to do the like the housing, so this is going to really disrupt the traffic in the area.
All right. To a city plan, I couldn't tell you, and that has to be approved from Elsa. All right, this board will see one thing, but Elsa has to sign off. Can they take the capacity? Is it there? They can, but Elsa has to sign off on it.
Okay.
And it gives the okay so that this board sees that they went in front of Elsa and Elsa said yes.
Got it. And my other question, so this is really like, it's basically I'm telling you from my experience. So if the township, all of us, as you know, residents or businesses or whatever, we do a petition, I'm not going to say really against the development of the site, because I understand how the township is, you know, like, we don't want to get into an argument and go to the Supreme Court and then lose the battle, basically. But if we can try to push, like, or pressure the developer to restore the house, and then can get away with some affordable housing, how would that work? Would that kind of, would that, something like that, would that work?
I don't think I can advise, I don't think I can make suggestions for how the public would undo our settlement agreement with the developer, undo our settlement agreement with Fair Share Housing Center, require an amendment to our housing plan, and force us to go back to court to then undo what they had approved for us.
Okay. I guess that's it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Lisa McCormick-Labory. I live at 3439 Lawrenceville Road. Thank you so much again for being here, for taking our questions. I know it is late, and I promise to stay on topic. I have two questions about it. You've raised the issue of liability of the township if people can get into the building, there's holes in the walls, the fence is inadequate. If it is designated as a property in need of redevelopment, what liability does that put on the township in order to, so should somebody get into the property once that designation has been made, and do we have a liability to demolish the house then?
No, there would be no liability shifted to the township with the designation. And there's probably no liability now. It's a private issue. It's a private property.
Okay. And my second question is, you've mentioned that the, you know, this could come to a vote tonight. Is that the intention, that you will call the vote tonight?
Yeah.
And then if it does pass tonight, what is the timing to come to the town council? Is that tomorrow?
So just understand and jump in if I'm wrong with regard to this. The work of this planning board is to make this determination, and then that doesn't approve of anything other than we've reviewed it, this is our vote, and then it goes, it doesn't die here if the vote is yes, then it goes to the council for their full consideration.
Thank you. Right. And my question was, when will it go to the council then? What is that normal timing? Is there a 2-week period? Would it be tomorrow night?
It's not tomorrow night.
It's not tomorrow night. When would that be?
Like May 5th. What is the next one? The second one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So hold on 1 second. We're going to get a date. So
okay.
It's the second,
thank you very much.
The second meeting in May.
Let's see. That would be.
So we have one on May 5th.
So 14th, May 19th, right?
May 19th.
Yeah. So that would be the target date for that.
Okay. And one other question, sorry, because I'm not a planner, I'm not an architect, I'm not a lawyer. I just would like to understand that when the developer brings their proposal to the planning board, and there's lots of studies that have to be done, and I know one is a traffic study, and having worked in community affairs for a corporation that was developing a major site within our township, and we were dealing with neighbors and traffic issues at the time, the company developed the local roads, they were very clear that they had no obligation to do that. The study is done, but there's no obligation on the builder to actually do remediation on the roads. The company chose to do that, and I was part of that process. So we're talking about a very busy intersection. So what is the obligation of the developer to remediate the roads in order to accommodate a larger influx of traffic, outflow of traffic? Or is that we do a study just so we know how bad it's going to be, or how good it's going to be? I don't want to make any assumptions here.
So their traffic study, if we're talking about the traffic, they might also address parking, but from traffic perspective, traffic studies typically project the number of trips coming to or from the site from residents on the property. and how that affects area intersections. So obviously it's going to include the intersection right proximate to the site. They will, their traffic engineers will determine if the additional traffic from what's included in the site plan application is going to require changes to the intersection or perhaps other aspects of road frontage and other roads in the area. But will their site plan require changes to the intersection? If so, what are those changes? It might be signal timing, it could be something to do with lane construction, how wide a lane is, if there's a shoulder, etc. If yes, then their traffic study will determine if they are responsible for that change. So for example, it might find that the intersection does need to be upgraded, but the vehicles from this development are 10% of the vehicles creating the change, creating the need for change, because perhaps the intersection is already in need of upgrade. They'll contribute, there are a few different ways that they might do this, but most common, they would contribute what's referred to as their pro rata share for those improvements. So if it were going to cost $1 million in this example, they would contribute 10%. The complicating factor here is that these are not just local roads. So they're not proposing road improvements, working with just Jim's office to determine how to do this. They have to work within state and county jurisdictions for those roads as well. So it's a bit of a complicated, further complication, but that's fundamentally what happens. They do a study to determine, are road improvements necessary? If so, what are they, and what contribution is necessary from the developer in order to facilitate those road improvements.
Mm-hmm. And the developer pays for that study and conducts, and hires the engineering firm.
Yes.
That conducts that study, is that right?
The developer does hire those. However, mm-hmm. Part of any site plan application is that all of their documents, including their traffic calculations and the traffic study as a whole, is reviewed by the planning board traffic engineer, who's typically here for those types of applications, mm-hmm. not tonight. They're also reviewed by Jim and folks in his office as well, so that the township can confirm what the developer has said is accurate, and to require amendments to what they've indicated if that's necessary.
Okay, thank you very much.
John Gregg, 657 Rosedale Road. I have a few brief questions and a brief comment. The first question, Ms. McManus, where is this presentation that you had today on the Lawrence Township website, and when was it posted?
The presentation I gave this evening, correct?
Yes.
That was not posted on the website prior.
So you're planning on posting it in the future? Is that?
I'll defer to township staff. I'm happy to share it for posting if they like.
Again, the report is up online, yeah, on our website.
So the report that was presented tonight, or
the full report, which is what this presentation was based on, has been available for some time on the website.
And this was an extraction from the full report.
Yes.
Okay. Next question: what is the position of Bristol-Myers Squibb on the designation of this property as a non-condemnation area in need of redevelopment, and their position on the plans to incorporate this property into the high and low income housing projects that will be built in support of the Fort Brown housing agreement?
They've not reached out to the township. They've been noticed as part of this hearing, but unless there's somebody in the audience now that represents them and would like to share their position has not been made known to the township.
Okay. You did mention that there was a potential, and this has come up a couple of times now, a major cost for a sewer extension to the Gulick site, if the Gulick site were renovated. Wouldn't that also have to be done if we had 110 housing units there? You'd also have to have sewer for all of those people. And it sounded like, from what someone said earlier tonight, that sewer would go through the Bristol-Myers Squibb existing property. Is that correct? And the other one would be, who would pay for that, the taxpayers or somebody else, to connect the 110 units to the sewer system?
The township, my expectation is the developer will pay for that sewer service extension to their property. I don't know what the route will be right now, whether they'll go through BMS or use existing roadway, that I don't know.
Which would have some impact on the roadway. Because one of the things that I also heard tonight was that the King's Highway had some special designation that doesn't enable it to be widened or that work to be done on that. Is that correct? So does that mean that all of this would have to be done on Province Line Road instead?
I don't know that Route 206 cannot be widened, but certainly my point, if you're referencing something I had said, is that the historic designation may certainly be a factor in their any application to DOT for road widening or other improvement work. But I can't comment on what DOT may or may not permit.
I had actually, the town manager, I had a quick question that did you answer?
Follow
up. Sorry, that was the last one. Didn't mean to let you not go on your emergency mission here. You had mentioned earlier that taxpayers are not included in this discussion. You were concerned about that earlier in the meeting. Does that mean that for this property, the Gulick property we're talking about, that there's not going to be a payment in lieu of taxes or a pilot program, which is essentially a tax abatement program that would impact taxpayers? Are you on the record now as saying that there won't be any special tax advantages given to the developer?
I'm not on the record of saying that, no. A pilot is certainly something that's absolutely in play, for sure.
And that would affect taxpayers, right?
How would,
tax revenue?
How would it affect taxpayers?
Well, if some people are getting a tax abatement, that means that the taxes, to pay for the services are paid by other people in the township.
Okay, if that's how you're viewing it. I mean, for me as a municipal manager, pilots tend to go 95% to the municipal government, which goes directly to our operation and the services that we provide.
Right.
So to me, in terms of the impact on our municipal budget, is not a deficit. It's the opposite way, which results in lesser taxes in terms of municipal budget.
Has that been decided already, or is that one of the things that's under consideration?
Absolutely under consideration. In an area in need of redevelopment, that's absolutely one of the elements. Sure.
It's one of the elements that will be enabled by this designation, if approved, for this being an area in need of redevelopment.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Sir.
Can I go now? No.
Please.
We're not aware of any developer.
Yeah, one of them. care one thing. Max Hayden said.
No coffee tomorrow night.
But he was a lot that was the ace. I'm sure you can't have a certain amount.
Of the property at 3641 Lawrenceville Road as a designation as a redevelopment area.
Second.
Now we can discuss.
Beth, the first Brad.
Mr. Moore.
Can that person raise their hand? Who was that?
It was Mr. Moore.
Which was the first Brad? Okay.
It's right there.
Yeah, Brad. He was up there.
Okay.
Deep pants.
Yeah.
Yes, actually.
Addressed his concern and that it's on the record.
It's not the historic designation?
About the private capital trying to rebuild?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so I heard there were a number of concerns. Thank you. There were a number of concerns cited about the property's ability to develop, that it could still go through the use variance process to obtain a use variance, and that this redevelopment designation is not necessary to facilitate that type of activity. And to be honest and to be fair, I think that may not be untrue. And there are criteria that are based on that type of property condition. So for example, criterion C talks about vacant land that has been vacant for some time that for some property condition is unlikely to be developed through the instrumentality of private capital. And that's an example of a site that its conditions are so problematic for some reason that no developer is willing to take a chance and seek development rights, seek site plan approval. Here, I'm not sure that this site qualifies as that, and that's why I didn't cite criteria C. But instead, what I'm recommending the planning board consider is criterion A, which is about generally unsafe, dilapidated conditions that are conducive to unwholesome living or working conditions, which doesn't cite the ability of a developer to still obtain site plan approval or D variance approval. And I'm also recommending the board consider criterion D, which talks about areas with buildings or improvements which are dilapidated, have a faulty arrangement, etc., such that they're detrimental to the safety, health, morals, or welfare of the community. And so similarly, that criterion doesn't talk about the inability of the property to attract a developer. Because one of the things to remember is redevelopment is often, but is not necessary to be used to demolish buildings. Redevelopment designations are used for purposes of rehabilitation as well. So these criteria don't necessarily assume that they can't attract a property owner. A and D are really about what are the conditions of this property, period. I hope that answers your question.
based on both my observations of the site itself and what Beth's presentation, where I'm persuaded to vote in favor of this. Couple of things. First of all, there was a question as whether or not the developers or the owners are being compensated for the getting a benefit, but the fact this non-condemnation allows us to go through this process without having to make any compensation that normally be done during an eminent domain proceeding. Question you answered, Beth, was that I asked this whether this house could be remediated, and you said no. I'm concerned that this is, you know, from my torts classes in law school, an attractive nuisance that could cause be an unsafe condition. I just have to say too, and a little bit off record here, you know, age alone doesn't require or mitigate that this place be preserved. My grandfather, George Caney, was a builder, and he built many houses in the Middletown section of River Plaza in the shore that are over 100 years old. And all those houses are still standing in very good condition because they're kept up. So, you know, the fact that this house, I grant, is over 170 years old, I just don't see any way that this is going to be kept up or remediated. They've had 30 years in which to do this, and it just doesn't look like it's going to go any further. So in that regard, I'm inclined to vote for this.
Go ahead. I think there's a common feeling here that we're in a situation that nobody wants to be in. It kind of stinks. The reality of our predicament is we have few choices. But my question is, how can we avoid this situation in the future? Is there some way that we can, you know, look out at the community and see the potential for this happening somewhere else and somehow or other keep it from happening? And I don't know who can answer that question, but I think we don't want to be in this situation again.
I think that private properties that may be beloved for any reason, whether they're historic or interesting, important to the community for some reason, if there's deterioration occurring, I think it's going to require, it may require outreach and public resources to be applied to a site much earlier. It could have been, I mean, sure, municipalities can always purchase land, but it could have been tax abatements in the past for restoration of the buildings. There are other actions that would have needed to be taken by the municipality perhaps decades ago to have arrested the deterioration that we see today.
Would the Brearley House and what was done there be an example of what might be done somewhere else?
I don't know enough about the history of how the Brearley House came to be the asset that it is today to be able to answer that. I'm sorry. I mean, I think ultimately there are where a municipality has a problem property, as you might refer to it, there are a number of strategies that they can use. It's not just condemnation or acquisitions, not just tax abatement. There are a variety of tactics, but I think the lesson for folks is early intervention, much decades ago on this particular property when the intervention would have been much easier to implement and more cost effective. To do so for those that are concerned about, you know, taxpayer dollars and government efforts at private development.
I get the impression that unless there is a dedicated group of residents that really are interested in preservation, and we have such a group, that these buildings will probably not be preserved if the owner is not on board.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Unless there's public money involved in the project, private developer has setting aside some ordinance provisions and zoning, they have the ability to use the property and demolish the property as they see fit.
Thank you.
Sanctity of property rights. I just want to say a couple things. We are all a part of this community, and we all care. But in this room, we have different roles and different responsibilities and different interests. And advocacy is something that should be embraced. And I just want to say, Ms. Millie? She left, but I wanted to just tell her she's a fighter and a scrapper, and I know where that comes from, and so I kind of came in hot with her a little bit because she was taking a different tact, and so I wanted to apologize to everybody else out here about that. It's just passionate advocacy, but many of you came up and you advocated from your heart and from the law and from facts, and that's always appreciated. We all appreciate that. For me, that whole element, like I said before, about this property being in a state of disrepair, yeah, it's really kind of, the law is kind of hokey with regard to that. But we have a very limited role here tonight, and it's a part of a process that will end up ultimately before the governing body, the five elected officials who will make that final determination. But our role here, it compels me to be voting yes, because I think the law and the facts all dictate that it's appropriate for us to say this is an area in need of redevelopment based upon what we've heard today, based upon the presentation, and based upon the facts as we know them to be. So, and I echo you, no one wants to be here. No one wants to do this, but this is just something that we all have a role in, and I'm interested in complying with the law and meeting my fiduciary obligations with regard to this. And so that's why I'm voting yes.
I've served on this board for many years. I've been off it for the past couple years. Phil started about the same time I did. So to me, and me and Phil are the senior members up here. I remember when this application came in front of us as Care One. And then I remember how it fell apart and how they said they wanted this. It went to zoning and went to court and everything. Sitting here tonight after when I first moved in this township and saw what that building looked like, I felt it should have been saved. But I have no say over it. The homeowner doesn't, or the property owner does. And I do remember that fire back in, I think it was 2011. I was over at Dave LaFay's house when that fire started. And we saw it just when he owned that dentist's office there. But tonight brings back memories when we were trying to see what can be done to that, move the house and keep it and make it part of Care One. It didn't work. To me, the house is at the stage, it's better off if it comes down. I served with the 469th Engineers, and I've done a lot of work where we had to do stuff down at Fort Dix, AP Hill, and throughout New Jersey and other states that we had to go into. And we had to take down some, to me, World War I barracks that meant something, or World War II. There were some Civil War things they found. But looking at the stage this is in, I have to say I support that we make it a redevelopment zone.
Should we call the question?
Yeah, call it.
Okay. Mr. Nowinski?
Yes.
Mayor Bobbitt?
Yes.
Councilman Kornacki?
Yes.
Ms. Connolly?
Yes.
Mr. DeShula?
Yes.
Mr. Duran?
Reluctantly, yes.
Mr. Leggett?
Yes.
And Ms. Loveless?
Yes.
All business. Seeing none, moving on to closing adjournment.
Motion to adjourn?
Yes. Second.